Thank you, John. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to be here with my colleague, George Abbey, who's former director of the Johnson Space Center, actually does know a lot about space, and of course with our other colleagues who you've heard from already. I want to thank you all for being here today. In 2005, George Abbey and I wrote a paper for the American Academy of Arts and Sciences that was entitled United States Space Policy Challenges and Opportunities. The paper that George and I will discuss today is an update. Essentially, we were asked to do this and very pleased to do so. We'll reflect on the issues that we raised 4 years ago, what's happened since, and where we think the program really ought to go. So I'll comment on the issues we raised in our earlier paper and a little bit about what's happened, and then I'll turn to George, who will highlight, I think, what are our most important findings, and then tell you what recommendations we're making to the Obama administration and the Congress. The central message we both want to get across to you today is a very positive one. The election of a new president with a progressive agenda for the country presents NASA, under its capable new leadership, with a unique opportunity, we believe, to demonstrate that it's every bit as relevant in post-Cold War world as it was in the days following Sputnik. This will require, though, that the Obama administration, working with Congress, support NASA in doing three things. First, restructuring the human spaceflight program to meet important but realistic objectives. Second, reestablishing a balanced overall set of space activities that retain science and aeronautics as top priorities. And third, focusing the agency's legendary capabilities on some of the nation's most critical needs, especially in the areas of energy, areas that NASA and the space program know really quite well. So solar, for example, fuel cell technologies, low carbon fuels, fuel efficiency, and the environment, in particular, satellite observations, modeling capabilities that NASA knows very well. NASA's been strong in these areas for a long time, but for a variety of reasons, it has not been, I think, so obvious, certainly to the country. So we think this agency can play a very important role in dealing not just with our capabilities in space, space science, space exploration, but dealing with some of the most critically challenging problems that we have faced today. So we're proposing a somewhat new direction for NASA, a space program that's both progressive and conservative and can be carried out with existing capabilities and realistic budgets, and an agency that is critical to meeting the needs here on Earth, as well as probing the mysteries of space. The opportunities are there, but with all such opportunities come real challenges. And so let me give you two snapshots represented by our two papers that I said earlier the Academy has published. In our 2005 paper, we observed the Bush administration's civilian space policy, saying that we thought it presents a paradoxical mixture of high ambition and diminishing commitment. You'll recall the Bush administration had a timetable for the following goals and priorities: complete the space station and retire the shuttle by 2010, develop a new spacecraft by 2008, fly it by 2014, and return to the moon by 2020, I would say a place we've been several times, and prepare for future trips to Mars sometime down the road. President Bush promised modest increases in NASA's budget, and NASA quickly reset its priorities, becoming, in our view, a single-focus Moon-Mars mission agency. In our earlier paper, we expressed the view that the new plan was indeed bold, but we called it incomplete. For one reason, science was missing as a priority, and unrealistic, because the money, at least any real estimate of what these things would cost, appeared to be missing. In addition, we made the point that any such bold plan for a U.S. space program, indeed more generally, the future American leadership in space, will require a robust commercial space industry, a well-trained workforce, a credible plan for science and human exploration, and expanded international cooperation. So to be more specific, we listed four barriers, we call them barriers to progress. The first was the impact of export controls, ITAR in particular, on space commerce. the U.S. simply cannot have a successful space program without a strong commercial space industry. Your company knows it's in trouble when your foreign competitors are advertising their services as ITAR-free, meaning nothing in them is U.S.-made, and then walking away with the business. Moreover, these costly regulations, which were intended to benefit national security, appear to have had the opposite effect. Second barrier, the projected shortfall in the U.S. science and engineering workforce. This is a large issue. It threatens U.S. leadership in more areas than space. It's been made very clear by a number of reports by organizations such as the National Science Board and the National Academies Rising Above the Gathering Storm report and testimony by such business leaders as Bill Gates. Third barrier, inadequate planning for the future of NASA and the U.S. space program. Unrealistic objectives, in our view, lack of planning, and inadequate budgets appeared to us in 2005 to virtually guarantee that the human exploration program would be set back for several years, and science as well. The fourth barrier, a loss of international cooperation. We felt that by labeling the Moon Mars program as an entirely U.S.-led operation and bowing out of the space station without consultation with other nations, our credibility as a reliable international partner took a really big hit. In addition, the previous administration's posture on the military use of space, as you've heard Nancy talk about, reinforced that impression abroad, the impression that we really had no interest in international cooperation. So the title of our new paper, the one you have with you today, includes the phrase "Challenges and Opportunities Gone Astray," which pretty well summarizes what we believe has happened in the past 4 years. With regard to export controls, the good news is there's much greater recognition that this is a serious problem, that the application of ITAR to all forms of space research and space commerce, which was never intended, has had serious unintended consequences, and the system needs an overhaul. With regard to the projected shortfall of the U.S. science and engineering workforce, we've made very little progress, while other nations, for example China, continue to forge ahead. With regard to NASA and the U.S. civilian space program and international cooperation, the situation is even worse than we anticipated 4 years ago. The modest infusion of new money that the president promised never arrived, but NASA still had deadlines to meet. Progress on the proposed shuttle replacement constellation has been disappointing, making it likely the U.S. will not have its own space transportation for 5, possibly 10 years. The previous NASA leadership felt compelled to cut back on science, astronomy, Earth observations, life science, space medicine, aeronautics, and other activities in an attempt to follow the president's directives with inadequate funding. The highly successful Hubble telescope was almost left to wither and die until pressure from the community and from friends in Congress caused NASA to reverse that direction. Another example, the previous NASA leadership also made a decision not to fly, not to fly an innovative astrophysics experiment that was called AMS. It stands for Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer. It rolls right off the tongue, you know, if you practice it. This instrument was already built using $1.5 billion worth of DOE money under an agreement with NASA to fly the instrument. And then, because of shifting priorities, decision was made not to fly it. This is an international project. It involves 16 other countries. It involves over 500 scientists. Extraordinary experiment. It would be the single most exciting experiment, in my personal view as an unbiased physicist, to actually ride on the space station and do work. Well, again, pressure from the community and the help of some members of Congress caused NASA to reverse that decision, and it is, we understand, scheduled to fly on the last shuttle. In short, we believe NASA has been trapped by expectations it could not meet and promises to it not kept. And understandably, morale at NASA has been at a low point, and talented people, many of whom brought you Apollo and the moon landings, the extraordinary planetary missions that excited us all, the Mars rovers, the Earth observation satellites, the Hubble space station, are retiring or bailing out. But all that said, we believe Sincerely, there's reason for optimism. Our central message today is that NASA has shown over and over again that it's incredibly resilient, that in spite of years of disappointments and shifting priorities, it has a cadre of truly outstanding, somewhat older, but outstanding people who are dedicated, even passionate about what they do every day. We believe that NASA and the U.S. Civilian Space Program can indeed have a future that's every bit as grand as its past. And while the challenges to America's space program are large, so are the opportunities. It's clear the Obama administration recognizes there is a need for a careful review and a new direction for NASA. We're very heartened by the president's choice for NASA's new administrator and the appointment of such a distinguished Blue Ribbon Committee under the leadership of Norm Augustine to offer guidance to the Obama administration on future humans in space. So I now want to turn over to my colleague, George Abbey, can highlight some of the most important findings and describe our recommendations to the Obama administration and the Congress. Thank you very much.